We all know the fairy tales written down by Hans Andersen, the Brothers Grimm in the 19th century, but know very little, if anything, about the fairy tales written down in the 17th century by a French author, Marie-Catherine d'Aulnay. She was the first person to use the term fairy tale in her new collection of stories, and she has had a very interesting and mysterious life, some of which we will be told by our next guest, author Melissa Ashley. Melissa's written a fine account of the life of Marie Catherine in 17th century France, and she joins us not online from Paris, but Brisbane. Melissa's first book was called The Birdman's Wife and was about Elizabeth Gould and the wife of John. Melissa, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Tell me about your central character, Marie Catherine.
Yes, I discovered Marie Catherine well before I discovered Elizabeth Gould, actually. About a decade ago, I was trying very hard to write a contemporary Grimm's fairy tale up into a novel, and it just wasn't working at all, so I did some research into the history of fairy tales, and I discovered that between the years 1690 and 1710 in France, there was this age when fairy tales were invented, and they were invented by Baroness d'Aulnoy. So she was born in 1651 or 1650, we're not quite sure, in Normandy, to a minor aristocratic family. Her father died when she was a child. Her mother remarried and the family moved to Paris. Marie Catherine, at the age of 15, was married. It was a forced or an arranged marriage, and it was common for aristocratic girls of the time, and it was organised by her mother. The fellow she was married to, Baron François de la Motte d'Aulnoy, was a newly ennobled man, so he wasn't born of the nobility. He made his money during the years of the Fronde.
Bought his title, effectively.
He did buy his title, yes, and he was a gambler and a womanizer, and he made his money during the Fronde, working for the Duc de Vendôme. But after the Fronde in 1665, the Duke died and he found himself out of a job, but he loved gambling, he needed some money, and I think this is why he was interested in Marie Catherine, because the laws at the time meant men had access to women's inheritances once they were married. So Marie Catherine was married to him at 15, he was 30 years older than she was, and by the age of 19, she'd had four children to him, two of whom survived, and he was dipping into her mother's money, and they decided enough is enough. We have to do something about this.
And they did a runner with the police on their backsides.
Yes. I can't reveal what they did, but that's covered in the novel. Marie Catherine, it's not known when she went, but she basically disappeared from the biographical record for 20 years, and she reappears in the Parisian publishing scene in 1690 with the publication of her first novel, The History of Hippolyte, and enclosed within that text is the very first fairy tale that was ever published, and it's called The Isle of Happiness.
I should point out that the title of the book, your book, The Bee and the Orange Tree, isn't about pollination or keeping beehives. It is, in fact, the title of one of her stories.
That's right. It's a known story in France, but as you pointed out, nobody outside of France has heard of the French conteuses. Marie Catherine had colleagues, peers, who also wrote fairy tales at the time. And this fairy tale, I tell an abridged version of it because her fairy tales are very long. And it's about a baby, a princess who's separated from her nurse. They're sailing. A storm blows up. She's washed onto an island that's inhabited by cannibalistic ogres. The ogress, the female ogress decides to spare her, thinking when she comes of age, she can marry my ogre son. A prince washes up 15 years later on the island. It's a little bit like The Little Mermaid. The girl rescues him and they spend a lot of the fairy tale running away from these ogres who want to eat them. And there are all these exquisite transformations. And at one point, the prince is turned into an orange tree and the princess is turned into a bee. And someone actually breaks off a branch of the orange tree wanting to put it in a vase and blood pours out and they have to summon a fairy to turn these people back into their human forms and they live happily ever after
as
well.
There's a certain erotic undertow to that.
Yes, there is. It's look, I love Ovid and I love someone being transformed into a tree, so that's quite magical for me.
Now, let's talk about the salons of the 17th century because they're very important in what you have to tell us. I understand Marie Catherine ran a literary salon for years.
Yes, she did. So fairy tales came out of the literary salons of France. And there are all these stages in their evolution as well. So in the 1650s, you had some female aristocrats very high up in the royal family who had fought in the Fronde and they formed literary salons and they collaboratively wrote recollections of their experiences and published them. There was a woman called Mademoiselle de Scudery who ran a literary salon and she became a famous writer. Novels, apparently, in the early part of Louis XIV's reign were the most popular form read by women. And she talked about, in her novels, a utopian society that was run by women and there was no warfare. And women kind of spent their day cultivating conversation, friendships, giving gifts and so forth. And then Marie Catherine was a later generation of the salons where they were telling fairy tales. And they played all these games in the salons. So you could come along and get dressed up and act out a part of Ovid's Metamorphosis. You could compose a sonnet or a madrigal or you could recite a fairy tale. So Marie Catherine, I think as early as 1695, was running one of these salons and other fairy tale writers attended. Also, it was believed that in French culture that women had this special talent in terms of the arts of conversation. And so if you were a young man and you wanted to make it in society, you would first come along to the salons and get a little bit of education and culture.
Now, we should remind the listener that the salons have a long history. They originate in the 1650s and they survive all the way into the 1800s and the French Revolution, where quite often rebel plans were laid down. But coming back to this idea of spontaneously combusting artworks at a salon, it's one thing to spontaneously write a madrigal, but heavens above, to write a long fairy story?
Yes, well, I think that they were quite competitive, the conteuses, as they were known, the female fairy tale storytellers. And I think they had, you know, already composed their fairy tales somewhat and they recited them and they actually competed with each other and tried to outdo one another. There's Madame de Murat, Mademoiselle Le Hurtier, Madame de la Force, and they attended one another's salons and they actually dedicated fairy tales to each other in the forewords. So it was a really interesting period where there was this collaboration and competition.
I'm glad that they pre-prepared.
I think they did.
The record shows, you know, that Oscar Wilde used to rehearse his ad-libs long before he'd wander off to have a dinner with Whistler. Now, but you're convinced that your heroine is the first to coin the term fairy tale.
Well, I've read that that is taken from her first collection of fairy tales. So she inaugurated the publication of fairy tales that were an art form in the salons, an oral form. And then there was this vogue for fairy tales between 1697 and 1698. And some of those conteuses and Charles Perrault, who people would be familiar with, he was around at the time, started to publish collections of fairy tales. And her first collection...
We should remind people that he was the author of Tales of Mother Goose.
That's right. The Little Glass Slipper and Puss in Boots and so forth. So Marie Catherine's first collection was called Conte de Fées, Tales of the Fairies, and this is where the term fairy tale came from.
fairies as such that have a long prehistory?
They did. I think they can be traced back to medieval texts, and these fairy tales were influenced by a range of texts. So goes right back to Ovid and Metamorphoses, the Golden Ass from the 2nd century AD, medieval texts, Renaissance literature like Boccaccio's Decameron, the novels
well, of course,
that were popular
Shakespeare.
In the 17th century.
Shakespeare loved Chaucer. His fairies, didn't he? He had quite a few fairies leaping about.
Yes, and the Irish fairies. I mean, the fairies have been around for a while, but I guess what was interesting about Murray Catherine's fairies and that of the Contuses is that they embodied the qualities of, for example, the court at Versailles, and she created these wonderful miniature kingdoms and with peopled by the fairies, and the fairies could be good or bad. You know, they were a bit ambivalent and they were interesting in this way, and they were also, her fairy tales were directed at adults, not at children. So they
reading your book, you realise that her patriarchs, kings, fathers, princes, often depicted as pretty useless, passive or ailing in some manner, were her heroines, a smart and resourceful, cultured and intelligent.
That's exactly right. And that's the way that Murray Catherine very subversively criticised what was going on in the 1690s, which was quite a dark period in the very long reign of Louis XIV. By this time, the country had become completely religiously intolerant. So if you were a Protestant or a Jew, you had to convert to Catholicism or leave the country because you couldn't get a job. To publish at the time, you had to have permission of the royal censor because Louis wouldn't tolerate criticism of the Ancien Régime. So there was a free press. People who wanted to criticise the state did it in Frankfurt and Amsterdam anonymously. These texts went back into Paris, into France. But the fairy tales got by the censor because they used the marvellous, they used Metamorphoses and miniature worlds to criticise the status quo. And yes, as you said, her female characters were foregrounded and they were the ones solving problems and they were the ones courting Prince Charming and giving him gifts.
So you argue that she develops the character of Prince Charming, who was very different to other princes.
I'm not sure if she had an original Prince Charming, but she certainly has a character called Prince Charming in a fairy tale called The Blue Bird, which is a cross between Rapunzel and Cinderella. There are stepsisters and a stepmother and a girl sent into a tower. And what I think is really appealing about that Prince Charming for readers today, he comes to visit the princess in the tower in the form of a blue bird, but he spends many, many hours cultivating that relationship with the princess by listening to her talk about her woes and her disgruntlements with her family. So she was all about the relationship and, you know, women at the time, they were forced into these arranged marriages. If they had, you know, a husband who was a gambler or abusive or indifferent, you know, there was some problem. The salons taught women and the fairy tales taught women to perhaps cultivate friendships with people and to focus on the culture, to cultivate their minds and everything, so to sort of take them away from that. And that's what she emphasised in her fairy tales.
In the moments we've got left, yes, as well as the salons, the role of the convent was significant to Marie Catherine.
That's right. Marie Catherine, in those 20 years when she disappeared, some people say she went to England and France because she wrote books set there. But she had in her first book, the hero of her book, Hippolyte, takes refuge in a convent, and the abbess of the convent is a very cultured and sophisticated woman, and he tells her a fairy tale while she's having her portrait painted. And I thought this was a lovely detail, and when Murray Catherine disappears in the novel, I have her spend time in a convent, and this is where her love of writing begins, and she starts to tell stories to the nuns, and she has access to the Abbess's wonderful library, because convents weren't just a place where, say, women went to have an unwanted child or they cared for the poor and the sick. They could be a place where young girls had some intellectual freedom and had a little bit of education and some community and some stimulation.
Well, Louis XIV's mistresses retired to convents and they lived very nicely, didn't they, in great
they
luxury
did.
In their own private apartments.
Exactly.
It's a very tempting system. Were women writers taken seriously?
I think they were taken seriously in the first, well, seriously perhaps by other women writers, and there were some men who supported them as well, and by their readers, in the first part of Louis XIV's reign, when you had this lovely flourishing of a modern culture. But there were arguments between modern writers and the classical writers at the time, and they really criticised some of these women, and they just brought all the usual charges against them, calling them frivolous and silly and unable to connect with matters of the state, domesticated and so forth. So you sort of had that typical situation that we can easily relate to today sometimes when women's concerns enter into novels and they're seen as not as interesting.
Well, as we both know, the standard opening for a fairy tale is Once Upon a Time, and it ends with lived happily ever after. We've got seconds, but she didn't live happily ever after, did she?
Murray Catherine.
No, yeah.
She retired to a convent at the end, but yes, there was a second scandal in her life, and the book looks at that.
You're not going to tell us, but we've got to read the book. Well, that's
you
all
do.
Right. That seems a fair relationship. Thanks very much. It's a great yarn, and the book is called The Bee in the Orange Tree, one of her fairy tales, and Melissa Ashley, the author of The Bee and the Orange Tree, is published by Affirm Press.